The Christmas Rainbow. This six-part story is a sequel to November Rain when Julie and Alan first fell in love. Sandra tries to help Julie live in the moment and to express appreciation for all kinds of love. Original story written by Julie Scott, Christmas 1961. Epilogue written by Juliana Scott Davidson, Christmas 1967. She will become Juliana Harvard 6 years later, in 1973. The author wrote the Riverdale stories in an era when the word, gay, meant happy and joyful. Nothing more. Part 1. Holly leaves. The girl had a funny feeling in the pit of her stomach. She couldn't explain it, but it was there. And she sat silently in the winter twilight, staring into the fading sunset. A yellow leaf floated downward and settled at her feet. She looked at it for a long moment, and then she suddenly closed her eyes and shivered in the evening's coolness. "Oh, come on, Julie," said someone with a merry voice behind her. "Snap out of it." Julie felt a hand on her shoulder. She looked up into the face of her lifelong friend, Sandra Lee. Julie chuckled a bit as she mumbled, "Oh, it's you, Sandra. Listen, Juliana Scott, someday you're going to have to learn, like I did, that you can't chase rainbows all your life. Take it from the voice of experience." She coughed mockingly. Julie laughed, but Sandra's words somewhat surprised her. Sandra seldom spoke with such sternness. "Oh, look." Sandra sat down on the love seat beside Julie. "Pretend I'm Alan," she said, putting her arm on the back of the seat and snuggling up close like Alan might have done at one time. Julie sat up straight. "Phooey on Alan," she sputtered with total disgust. "Who needs him?" Sandra jumped to her feet and pulled Julie up with her. "Good. I've got you out of your mood now. Let's go get ready for the party." So, casting aside her sunset and falling leaves, Julie followed Sandra to her room. Julie watched her friend vigorously brushing her hair and chatting pleasantly in anticipation of the coming party. "How can she be so gay?" Julie thought. "She's my best friend, and even she can't understand how I feel. Don't you think it's neat? Hey, did I tell you Alan called me last night? Man, that's Steve. You know he wanted to take me tonight. Oh, yes, I got a letter from Leroy today. Raymond's coming home from college week after next. Isn't that fabulous? I saw Ken downtown Thursday. You know, he doesn't get me as much anymore. Say, I hear Jim is home. Do you think he'll be there tonight?" These were the snatches of chatter Julie caught as Sandra dressed and primped. Suddenly Sandra stopped and looked at her friend Julie. "Pep up, Julie," she exclaimed. "We're going to have a blast tonight, aren't we?" she teased. Julie knew well what Sandra meant, but she smiled and shook her head. "No, Sandra, not me, not tonight." "Sure you will. Wait and see," Sandra said gaily. "Hey, it's almost 7. Let's go." She picked up two coats, threw one at Julie, and headed for the door. As Julie got into Sandra's car, she spied something on the floor. "Holly leaves," she queried, picking up the shapes of green construction paper. "Oh," replied Sandra, "those must have fallen out of the sack of Christmas decorations Marcia helped me make for home ec. Christmas, Holly." All at once Julie, in a momentary trance, realized why the mood was there as she had watched the sunset and the falling yellow leaf. Part 2. A Christmas Party. It was a lovely party, although it was very informal, for Mrs. Emery had planned it only a couple days in advance. The food was superb, and now the kids played ping pong and Chinese checkers. But it got too dull for Sandra and Diana, a vivacious blonde. Well, Steve had his car, didn't he? And Snack Keys was still open. Julie observed with interest the various personalities of her teenage friends. There were the younger ones, the 13 and 14-year-olds, Chubby, Jolly Donald, and Andy with the crew cut, who played ping pong now. There was shy, quiet, but always fun-loving Jeanette, timid, easy to get along with Darlene, Darlene's cousin Irene with the mysteriously bewitching eyes. There was the freckle-faced mischievous Frank, Ella's little brother, who was now goofing off with his Mexican friend Carlos just home from boarding school. Sam and romantically smiling Alice sat in a corner with another couple, the new Gaijo and pretty, blonde, but socially insecure Samantha. She admired very much the boy beside her who strummed the guitar. Then there was the pretty Spanish doll, Margarita, affectionately called Rithi. Now she sat talking to Alan, good-looking, witty, and magically charming Alan McIntosh. The room grew stuffy. Quickly Julie ran from the building, out into the cool night. She did not mind the soft drizzle of rain that fell onto her hair. In a luxurious white sedan sat the unhappy Steve chasing Cynthia. Julie watched as Carolyn literally dragged Cynthia out of Steve's car. Then Carolyn climbed in with Steve, and with Sandra and Kurt, an intellectual, but deliciously cute. They invited Julie to go along for the ride. It was short and simple, but fun. The night wore on. Julie found herself inside once more. Jim, the gay sophisticate who had come to the party only to bring his sister Cynthia, sat playing chopsticks with Alan. Now Alan called Julie to the piano, and she came like a robot. Jingle bells, jingle bells, silent night, holy night, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, sang the voices of those gathered around the piano, and Julie's hands followed mechanically. Finally, when all had lost interest except Alan, Joe, and Samantha, Alan said, "Play this." He placed music in front of Julie. The First Noel. The rickety old piano in the empty hall sounded sick, but Alan stood by its side, completely entranced. When Julie had finished, he said, "Play it again, please." Julie looked at him in wonder. There was a faraway look in his eyes and a strange glow on his face. Julie caught the spell, the atmosphere, the breath of Christmas. "I like it," he said, looking down at her. And Julie played it again. "Anyone need a ride home?" Sandra called as she flew down the steps. "I've got Daddy's car tonight." "I do," Alan called back. "Then, is it all right, Mom?" Mrs. McIntosh hesitated. "Okay." But 11 o'clock and not 1 minute later. Kurt, naturally, sat in the front beside his sweet Sandra, so Alan climbed into the back beside Julie. The night was chilly, and their warmth breath collected on the inside of the windows. Julie remembered another night, almost a year ago, when another car had been fogged up. It had been soon after last year's Christmas. But instead of Kurt and Sandra, there had been another couple, Ken and Gloria. Then, a touch of a hand and a look in two sincere blue eyes was all it took to write an innocent love. Now, the warmth of Alan's arms felt pleasant to Julie, but, like the spring violets frozen in the ground, she was numb, feeling no emotion for the boy whose lips pressed close against her own. "Sure, it's going to be fun. Don't you think so?" Sandra couldn't understand Julie. She turned off the engine of the car as they pulled into Julie's driveway. Julie forced a smile and laughed nervously. "Yeah. It'll be great. Then why are you acting so scared?" "Sandra," Julie sighed, "I was there last year." "With Alan," Sandra added with an air of finality. Part 3. Remembering Mexico. Christmas in Mexico. Last year it was an adventure, this year, well, Julie didn't know. There would be the same little town, the same old Spanish school, and probably most of the same young people, but not the same Alan. Only a year ago a very happy boy and girl were going to all the meetings together that weekend, enjoying each other's friendship, sharing the same faith, and loving the same God. There had been the grassy tree-shaded plaza where they ate in the twilight neath the southern stars, the Saturday night walk and the old Spanish mansion and the strumming of a lone guitar. Then there was that Sunday and shopping in Mexico, the scheme of Gloria and Julie to get Alan a real Mexican wallet for Christmas, which was so carefully planned, then so promptly figured out by Alan. Even now, Julie couldn't quite forget the strains of the Spanish chorus fading into the night. Romantic, festive, yes, but Christmas isn't all built around Alan, reminded Sandra. No, not all, agreed Julie. But he sure helped. The old Christmas carols, the simple Christmas story, another log in the stone fireplace, this had been Julie's Christmas Eve last year. That was the night Alan had squeezed her hand so gently and meaningfully, and said, "You're the greatest, Julie. I love you, pumpkin." That was the night he gave her the white Bible, the symbol of everything good and beautiful, everything their love stood for. I know Christmases can be neat, Sandra said now reminiscently. I remember last year and Christmas shopping with Leroy, then her tone changed suddenly. But really, men aren't so important. If every Christmas were just exactly alike, it would get pretty boring, wouldn't it? Just forget Alan and have a nice Christmas with your own family. Next year, and she changed back to the old Sandra again, who knows? There might be this tall handsome guy. Alan. Julie broke in almost teasingly. Never can tell. Sandra laughed as Julie opened the car door. Good night, Julie, she called as Julie waved from her front porch. Part 4. Christmas Memories. Thus the weekend passed, and Julie was at school again. The December sun shone through the crispy cold air into the windows of the old classroom, which was now quiet as the students finished the English exam. Julie finished, she was rechecking her paper. Then, through the stillness of the afternoon, she heard distant music. The pencil fell into her lap, and she listened. It was a pretty melody, a Christmas song, she knew, but what was the name of it? Her eyes wandered around the room, and her gaze fell on algebraic figures scrawled on the blackboard and came to rest on an empty desk near the front. It reminded her of a similar desk where Casey had sat in another algebra class 2 years ago. Suddenly she remembered the song, Sleigh Bells, of course. She saw an assembly gathered and there was Casey, dear Casey, in the school chorus. Julie felt that stuffy warmness of the assembly room and smelled the apple nut and candy packages that the faculty members passed out to the students. The Christmas program had been good, and Casey was especially nice. There were the memories she had of Christmas of her first year in the big high school. Be sure your name is on your paper, said Mr. Wesley. Fold your papers and pass them in. The music faded away and broke the spell. Julie glanced quickly over her answers again, and then the bell rang. Hark, the herald angels sing, rang out through the clear frosty night as the solicitors went from door to door on behalf of worldwide missions and bringing Christmas cheer to each home. It gave Julie a warm feeling inside to know she was doing something good for others. The stars twinkled high above the quiet brown hillside. In her mind, Julie could see a large brilliant star, and way in the distance a crude little stable where a babe slept in a manger. She saw the humble kneeling shepherds and the Virgin Mother with gladness in her heart. Julie, a fellow solicitor called, Mrs. Donaldson said to finish this street down to Arseny Road, and then we'll go back. Thank you. Julie took the literature and started on. Many of the solicitors went in twos, but Julie was alone. Not so the Julie of 3 years ago. Then it was Billy Kingston, blonde blue-eyed husky Billy. He was a tomboy gentleman, a ladies' man. There was just something about that Kingston family. Now Julie rang a doorbell and waited for an answer. There were merry voices and the sound of laughter as Julie and Sandra and Kurt and Alan approached another house. Someone welcomed them warmly and ushered them into the living room, where Pat Boone Records spun on the hi-fi. Julie felt like a puppet, pulled along with the crowd. Soon she found herself in the kitchen by the table, covered with cookies and punch. Mrs. Donaldson was so nice to treat the teenagers who gave their time on a Saturday night. The drink was refreshing, and the cookies were good. Christmas cookies. Billy and Julie had baked Christmas cookies together. The Kingston kitchen was small, and the aromas were delightful. And Billy's mom Norma was so sweet. Julie had spent many a day with the Kingstons, Norma, Billy, and his brother Eddie. Yes, there was something about that Kingston family. Well, if you've got to be home by 11, we'd better be going, Sandra's voice broke into Julie's thoughts. Thanks for everything, Mrs. Donaldson. Yes, thank you, echoed Julie. Numbly, she rose from her chair and headed for the door. Julie, what is wrong with you? Sandra almost demanded as they worked on Christmas decorations the next day. You've been acting so strange. Well, Julie's weak voice replied, maybe it's just Christmas. Christmas. Sandra looked at Julie as if she held in doubt her complete sanity. Well, I was just thinking of grade school and Eddie Kingston. Remember how we used to decorate the schoolroom windows? And we drew names to exchange presents. And we'd always gather in Miss Blossom's room and sing Christmas carols from those books we all got for a quarter at Sprouse Wright's. Sandra softened and smiled. Yes, those were the good old days. In her mind, she could see the paper wreaths and candles made by childish hands and taped to frosty windows. She heard young merry voices, somewhat off-key, and smelled the dampness of those week before Christmas mornings. But, she frowned, why should memories of happy times make you so gloomy?
Oh, I'm not gloomy, exactly, replied Julie. It's just that with every Christmas tree I smell, every song I hear, every bit of Christmas glitter I see, I relive a Christmas of the past.
Well, now, you just stop living Christmases past and start living this present Christmas, maybe a simple one with your family, like I said before, you rainbow chaser. Sandra spoke firmly but not unkindly. All the relatives and confusion and noise, the Christmas wrappings all over the living room and dirty dishes all over the kitchen, you call that a simple Christmas with my family? Sandra sighed then said despairingly, okay, so family is out.
Oh, I'm sorry, said Julie. I didn't mean to be so pessimistic. Let's get back to work on these decorations.
Sandra's smile was warm and understanding. You know, she said as they traced and cut, I think this banquet's going to be neat, don't you?
Sure is too bad Kurt can't come.
Do you really think Jim Donaldson will ask me?
Leave it all to Cynthia Donaldson, Julie assured her.
You don't have to worry. Don't you think Alan will ask you?
Julie shook her head. The only thing that's stopping him from taking that Sylvia Hawkins is the 30 miles between them. He'll probably end up going with Rethi.
She shrugged, but deep inside she could not forget. Sylvia Hawkins. How had she come into the picture, anyhow? One minute she was an insignificant unpopular sophomore, the next, a capricious flirt, pursuing and being pursued by the fabulous Alan McIntosh. And Rethi, what right did she have to Alan, anyway? Suddenly a hoarse rumble broke the quiet monotonous sound of snipping scissors. The house quivered, and the sky split in two. Then watery fingers of rain tapped on the window pane.
Hey, it's raining, exclaimed Julie.
No kidding, was Sandra's nonchalant reply.
Then, oh, I've got to get home. Mother and Daddy aren't home, and the washing's on the line and the lawn furniture's uncovered.
I'll see you tomorrow, okay? Julie watched Sandra run down the wet walk and dive into her car. For a long time she stood by the screen door, watching.
Rain, she muttered. Why can't it be snow?
Part 5. Finding Christmas Love. The sun hid behind the clouds, distinct shadows disappeared, and all was a world of gray. Sense of time seemed to slip away. And the rain dropped, dropped, dropped. And suddenly, out of the gray troposphere, written on every cloud, proclaimed by every droplet, the letters appeared, L-O-V-E. It was strange that implications of something so good and beautiful and happy should come during such a dreary day and the gloominess that permeated the air.
Mockery, thought Julie bitterly, sheer mockery.
Is there such a thing as love? What is love? Was it that mutual attraction Julie and Alan once shared?
Love, she grunted half aloud.
What does that have to do with now, with this Christmas time?
Alan doesn't love me, suddenly she stopped as she thought emphatically, so what?
The ground shook as the thunder roared and the lightning streaked across the sky. Torrents broke loose from the angry black clouds. But Julie's new concept of love did not fade. Through the rumble and rush, Julie growingly felt the spirit of Christmas, the spirit of love. There was Mama's love for the family in the big Christmas dinner she always fixed, Miss Blossom's love in listening to off-key carols and letting schoolroom windows get cluttered with childish decorations, love in the gifts, love in the lovely white Bible from Alan. There were always the pretty cards and festive packages, holly and berries and mistletoe, the scent of pine trees and beauty of the snow, the sound of bells, the glitter of the city, and carols drifting through the quiet night. But most important was the deeper meaning, the essence of Christmas, love. Each scene tumbled through Julie's mind, her family, the schoolroom, Eddie and Billy Kingston, cookies and caroling, Mexico and a white Bible and Alan, dear Alan. Julie closed her eyelids, and a contented smile crossed her face. God had given her Christmas, every Christmas she had known. He had left each lovely memory to be remembered, to be treasured. He had intended that she remember the love that was given each Christmas,
from the very first Christmas when he gave the supreme gift, right on through each of Julie's Christmases and every beautiful memory of love. She knew, now, that she must grow up and learn to return this love. Suddenly she felt a warm surge of appreciation of the expressions of love she had received, from Mama, the relatives, Miss Blossom, Eddie, Billy, Norma Kingston, Mrs. Donaldson, the kids at church, Casey Dunlap, and the chorus, Sandra, Mrs. McIntosh, even Alan, but especially God. In the coming years, would she not remember this year and the love and other good things it had brought? Somehow, in remembering the Riverdale Youth Club's banquet, she would forget that Alan took Rethi. She would lose the vision of rival Sylvia Hawkins when she recalled how she always ate lunch with her pal Marshall James while the muffled strains of White Christmas and Winter Wonderland floated through the noisy school cafeteria. Now, as suddenly as it had come, the storm ceased. And the sun, shining through the moist air, created a rainbow. Julie saw it first over in the apricot orchard, her Christmas rainbow, symbol of love. The next morning, the two girls walked down the street on their way to the banquet hall. "Oh, Julie, I'm so excited," cried Sandra. "I guess it's just the atmosphere, so near to Christmas and all. It's the banquet tonight and Christmas Eve on Sunday with Leroy," her voice trailed off. "Yes," Julie agreed, smiling, "Christmas time is a very gay season." "Well," said Sandra, "I'm glad you're a little more optimistic this morning." "Ah, Julie, how are you going to spend Christmas this year?" There was an expectant, teasing twinkle in Sandra's voice. "Oh, I don't know," Julie shrugged. "Probably have dinner with Mama and Grandpa Philip and Cousin Sue and Uncle Jake and all the rest of the relatives. We'll probably go for a ride in the country Christmas afternoon." "I don't know," Julie shrugged again. "It really doesn't matter as long as everybody has love, the Christmas spirit, down deep in their hearts." Sandra cocked her head and raised her eyebrows. "Very good, Julie. But what about Alan?" "Oh, I guess he'll have a nice Christmas, too," Julie answered with a twinkle. At once she grew very serious. "Sandra, I don't need to tell you how much in love I have been with Alan. He was everything a girl could want, and more." But, she bit her lip and shook her head. She was silent only a moment, and then she tossed her dark curls back and shrugged lightly. "But love is something very mysterious. Sometimes it's so real, but so intangible. It's like Christmas. For some, it comes for but a brief, beautiful moment, then it's gone. But it's gone only because people can't or won't hold on to it. Alan couldn't hold on to it, but you're holding it, for Alan," Sandra ventured. "No," Julie replied, surprising Sandra. "No," she repeated, slowly and deliberately, "I'm not in love with Alan McIntosh." The words stunned Sandra. "What? Why?" "Love responds only to love, Sandra, and not to hate. Alan hurt me, but it's all over now. Christmas means more than sentimentality." Suddenly Julie stopped. There, above Sandra's meadow, beyond the misty hills, Julie saw it again, her symbol of Christmas love. Sandra hadn't seen it yet, and she looked at Julie in silent wonder. "Sandra," she said with a quiet smile, "I caught it yesterday, that rainbow you told me to stop chasing. It encircled the moon last night and has left a beautiful glow in my heart." "Julie," Sandra giggled, "are you all right?" Julie chuckled, but she smiled in serious happiness. "It's just that I've found the true meaning of Christmas, love. Alan's love was one kind of love, but it's not the only kind. I've been so blind and selfish, not letting myself be happy just because Alan doesn't love me this Christmas. We can express love in so many ways, as the past years have proven. But this year I'm giving love to my own dear family. Maybe next year, and the years after that, love will be with Alan again, I don't know. Maybe not." Julie's eyes still fastened on the rainbow. "Maybe someday, somewhere, at an exotic dinner, by an ancient cathedral, or on a college campus, I'll find the man of my dreams. He'll be all of Alan, and more. He'll bring love and laughter and music into my life. Maybe," she smiled slightly, "he'll even be an only child like me." She stood still and looked at her friend. "Sandra, maybe it'll happen at Christmas time, and that rainbow will be in the sky." "Julie," Sandra said, looking at her in amazement, "You have caught a rainbow, the rainbow of Christmas love. But even until that magic day, whenever it happens, love will fill every Christmas. That's what Christmas is all about." Epilogue, Julie Scott Davidson. Julie couldn't see ahead to the next Christmas when she would be with Alan again, sharing a deeper kind of love, or to two Christmases ahead and the exciting romantic whirl with Mike Kerwin who would treat her like an exotic princess, or to four Christmases ahead when she would reach a maturity she couldn't imagine now and find herself engaged to Howard Davidson and busily planning a wedding for a whole 10 months away, or of the Christmas, her first Christmas as Howard's wife in their cozy apartment, and the true love that she and Howard and God would share. Julie couldn't know all these details, but she knew the rainbow would still be in the sky every Christmas. "I know, for I am Julie. And each Christmas brings a wealth of love I have never known before. It is Christmas again, my second Christmas with Howard, and it is more wonderful than the first. And, yes, Howard is an only child like me. Sandra and Bob, her husband, are sharing Christmas. Alan is spending this Christmas with his bride, Shirley. The carolers still sing. And everywhere there are Mrs. Donaldson's and Norma Kingston's and Miss Blossom's and Mama's and high school choruses, even Billy's and Eddie's and Casey's and Alan's and Mike's, who are expressing their love, too, in their own special way. And my Christmas rainbow is still in the sky.